Hello?
Good evening, Lyman. Is this you? This is KD0CDQ, Mike out here in Kansas. Is that you? Over.
That is me. I'm just doing a, microphone check. Can you hear me fine or no?
I hear you loud and clear, and in radio terms, I hear you 5x9. Very good. Listening good. You're doing good. Over.
I have a question.
Well, I'm glad you only have one. I've got a bunch, but I won't bother you. What do you got, Lyman? What's your question? Go ahead.
Well, after the net, or as you say, meeting, do we have to go straight to the test, or can we study a little bit more and then go to the test? Over.
Well, Lyman, it's totally up to you. The teacher's not up here with a great big yardstick on going to tap you on the head if you don't do what they say. No, take the test when you're ready. But we have to start this program, so we'll discuss this later when everybody comes aboard. But right now, I'm going to have to read the preamble, and we're going to get started, Lyman. So we'll get back to you, okay? I don't want to brush you off, but we got to get everybody rolling, and we can talk about this later. KD0CDQ.
Sounds good.
Welcome to the Outreach Program, sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to obtain license status. This is the first in a series of an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for the technician class license. This course will be conducted was conducted with two sessions weekly at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Tuesday and Sunday evening. The reason I say we have this Sunday and then Tuesday, and we finish with this group of classes. For those who are already licensed and would either wish a refresher course or would just like to listen, please connect to our SCARS server at either EchoLink node number 96140 or IRLP node 9614. Dropping, skipping a paragraph, and going on to the material being presented is formatted by data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in the presentation format by SCARS. That's South Coast Amateur Radio Service. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at VOIP at voipnet.southcars1word.com. Before we start this evening's program, it should be mentioned that the material being covered is based on the new Q&A pool that became effective July 1, 2014. It should be further mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing session on this server, please drop us an email at VOIP at voipnet.southcars.com. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? My name is Mike India Kilo Echo. My call sign is Kilo Delta Zero, Charlie Delta Quebec, and I am the opening moderator for this evening. Now, if you have your test questions in front of you, tonight we'll be looking at the T8 section, so it's T8 alpha area, so you want to key up your question pool to that group. If you're listening for the first time, get on the South Coast, well, the address I gave you, get on that address and just get in technical classes and hunt on through, and you'll find a listing of all the new questions in that pool, and you can go right on down to the Tango 8 alpha section where we're beginning. And tonight we're going to begin with Gordon. So in a moment here, we'll be kicking in with KY6 Victor. We'll be starting with the first question. Gordon, take it away. Over.
Well, thank you, Mike. Good evening to you, sir. Good evening to everybody. Gordon here, KY6V, squawking in from southeast Florida. I'd like to say that when we complete the class tonight, you will be at 87.5% finished with the course. And the final class will be on Tuesday the 12th. Thank you for being here with us, and we wish you strong winds and following seas to get to your objectives. Tonight, Kathy and I will be running the course. We've elected to do about 3 questions each, and then pass it on to each other. So bear with us, and we'll get going. We're going to start with supplement T8, as Mike mentioned. This covers modulation modes, amateur satellite operation, operating activities, non-voice communication, and I will tell you that there are 4 exam questions that will appear on your exam when you take the final one, and this includes 4 groups of information. Let me buy a nickel for everybody here. We're going to start off with the first question tonight being T8 Alpha 01, T8A01, which reads, which of the following is a form of amplitude modulation? They give you 4 answers. The correct answer is C as in Charlie, single sideband. They put some distractors in there, like A is spread spectrum, B is packet radio, and D is phase shift keying. The technology is different than amplitude modulation. So let me simply say that in radio communication, single sideband modulation, SSB, as it's referred to, or single sideband suppressed carrier, SSB-SC, is a refinement of amplitude modulation that is more efficient, uses transmitter power and less transmitter power and bandwidth. Amplitude modulation produces an output signal that has twice the bandwidth of the original baseband signal. Now, said differently, on the original amplitude modulation technique that the hams used was 6 KC wide, 6 kilohertz wide. Sideband came in, single sideband, and only used 3. So we gained a lot of band space for additional activity. Any questions on this, please? KY6V for the Outreach South Cars.
Yeah, I have a question. What was the number you said just before you ended? It was 6Z? I can't remember. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm not sure you're going to find that in the question when you take the exam, Lyman. I was just trying to say that amplitude modulation normally requires 6 KC or 6 kilohertz, I should say, 6 kilohertz of bandwidth, so it's pretty wide. Single sideband comes in and uses the amplitude modulation technique, but only does so by using only half of that. So it uses half of the carrier, which is about 3 kilohertz wide. Does that make sense, sir, or over?
That makes a lot of sense. Thanks. Over.
Okay. Thanks for being with us tonight, Lyman. We're going to move on to T8 Alpha 02, T8A02. That question reads, what type of modulation is most commonly used for VHF packet radio transmission? What type of modulation is mostly commonly used for VHF packet radio transmissions? And the proper answer to this out of the 4 that they give you is A as in alpha, and it's FM. Don't memorize that alpha designator, A, B, C, D, because it's going to switch around on you. But the answer is FM, frequency modulation. And the simple thing to think about here is the modulation of a radio or other wave by variation of its frequency. That's the key right there, by its frequency, especially to carry an audio signal. Any questions on this, please? Over.
This is CDQ. May I add to Lyman that when you get a handheld radio, it'll probably be a very high frequency, VHF, and it'll run on FM. It's an FM radio is what it is. Over. Any other questions or comments?
Guess not, Mike. Let me see if I've got it. All right, my last question in my parley of three here, and then I'm going to turn it to Kathy, is T8A03. T8Alpha03. That question reads, which type of voice mode is most often used for long-distance, weak signal contacts on the VHF and UHF bands? Let me read that question again. I want you to think about this one. Which type of voice mode is most often used for long-distance, weak signals on the VHF and UHF bands? Now, the proper answer to this one is C as in Charlie, and it's single sideband. And we'll try to explain this. Forget about the distractors of FM and DRM and so on and so forth. Basically speaking, there are no hard and fast numbers on when this FM dropout occurs because it varies depending on FM receiver design. But a reasonable rule of thumb is that it will occur at about the equivalent of 7 dB signal-to-noise ratio, and it can be higher. Now, by contrast, a single sideband signal should be completely copyable down to 3 dB above the noise and sometimes even lower. Now, I will admit that it may experience fading for periods of several seconds or longer that make it much more difficult to copy, but bits and pieces may still be audible enough to provide some understanding of what is being said. An FM signal, now we're comparing FM and single sideband on VHF and UHF, okay? So, by contrast, we'll start, you know, the FM signal will start popping in and out and ultimately disappear completely and well before the noise floor is reached. And you have no hope of copying what cannot be even heard. So let's just wrap this whole thing up. The answer is single sideband for more copyability on VHF and UHF under most circumstances. Any comments, please? Okay, all's quiet on the Western Front. Hello, Kathy. Good evening. Thanks for being my partner. You're up to Tango 8 Bravo, KY6V. Go ahead, please.
All right, Gordon, thanks so much for beginning the session tonight. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'm actually going to do T8 Bravo, which is amateur satellite operation, Doppler shift, basic orbits, operating protocols, control operator, transmitter power consideration, satellite tracking, and digital modes. And my actual question is T8. Bravo 01. And it reads, who may be the control operator of a station communicating through an amateur satellite or space station? Let me read that again. Who may be the control operator of a station communicating through an amateur satellite or space station? And I'm actually going to give you the correct answer, and then I'll talk to you a little bit about the distractors. But Delta D is the correct answer. Any amateur whose license privileges allow them to transmit on the satellite uplink frequency is the correct answer. And those A, B, and C, where it states only an amateur extra class operator, a general class licensee or higher licensee who has satellite operator certification, or only an amateur extra license class operator who is also an AMSAT member, they're all wrong. Correct answer is Delta. This answer, someone speaks for itself. Most of the uplinks are on 440 megahertz, and therefore anyone holding a technician class license or higher should be able to operate in this fashion. Do we have any questions or any comments? If so, we ask you to come aboard.
Question.
Go ahead, Lyman.
When you say the satellite communication. Wait, yeah. The station communication and space station, does that mean talking to them? Or does that mean you're allowed to talk to the space station?
Lyman, go ahead and repeat that question for me.
Sorry, I just thought that over and that was all over the place. When you said the license that you have to do that, are you really allowed to speak to the space station?
Let me jump in on this one, Lyman, KY6V. What we're really talking about is controlling the satellite in this question, and it is the telemetry control for orbital considerations, power considerations, any adjustments on the transmitter and receiver. This is not really a voice-type communication with a satellite. What you are doing is acting as the control operator to maneuver the craft in the way that you need to maneuver it. So I'm not sure that I'm explaining your question properly to you, but it's a control function and not a communication function where you can talk to the satellite. Does that make sense? Over.
That surely answers my question.
Okay. Thanks, Lyman. Boy, sure glad to have you aboard here. Kathy, go ahead, please. KY6V.
This is CDQ, if I can break in. Part of your question was, can we talk to a satellite? It's possible, but they're only overhead for a matter of seconds. Now, they will communicate with school groups on a pre-planned orbit as they go around the Earth. Classrooms, you know, elementary school usually, can communicate with the satellite, but it's all pre-prescribed, pre-planned. People do communicate with the satellites when they go overhead. They certainly do, and they do with a handheld radio and a little handheld antenna. But you need to know exactly when it's going overhead, the angle on the horizon, because it sweeps right over the top on occasion from where you live. Yes, you can talk to a satellite, but it's pretty rare. It's pretty rare to get in indeed, I believe. It's KD0CVQ. Sorry, Kathy, I just wanted to make sure. Lyman realized, yeah, it's possible to talk to a satellite, but that's not too likely. Over.
IBU3MEW.
Hey, Bill, go ahead, please. Go right ahead there, Bill.
Yeah, good evening, Mike and Kathy and Gord. IBU3MEW here. I think it's maybe a little bit more unrare than you realize, Mike. We've been doing it at Field Day for a number of years. We actually have computer-controlled satellite antennas to track the satellite, and we've communicated through it, and so on. One question that Lyman had was talking to the space station, and indeed that is possible, and it can be done with a 5-watt handheld and a rubber ducky if you know when the space station is coming over. The tricky part is, are they awake? Many times I have watched them go overhead here in the evening time and had my handheld there ready to communicate with the uplink and the downlink frequency, and it's quite possible to do. You have maybe 90 seconds to 2 minutes maximum to contact them, but they got to be awake. They got to be at the amateur radio station in the space station, and they got to be looking for contacts. I have heard recordings of what other amateurs around North America have done, and so far I haven't done it, but I'm trying. We have one guy in Peterborough that did it here in my hometown, and it was pretty exciting. He actually got to talk to Chris Hatfield, who's a Canadian amateur radio operator and was also an astronaut, and one of the last Canadian amateurs to be up there as a commander of the space station. That's all I got. E3MEW, back to net.
All right, I want to thank you, Gordon, and you, Mike, and you, Bill, for coming aboard and helping out Lyman with this question. And I guess we have another comment, and this is actually from Gary on the same question. You know, this is an interesting question and interesting comments, so I appreciate them all. So, Gary, KC2RMO, come aboard with your comment.
Hey, it actually worked. My phone was kind of hanging up. I was getting worried. Just wanted to pass along something for Lyman, too, that Bill was absolutely right. You definitely can talk to the space station. They usually set those things up with school groups. Science teachers are real big on setting that up with their classes, and it's set up months in advance, and it's very elaborate with what they do. But you can very easily get the position of the space station. I subscribe to a little NASA RSS feed that gives me the position over my house every time it's going to appear. So I know, you know, that it's going to be so many degrees above the horizon at 9 o'clock at night or whatever, you know. And it's really cool because you can just go out there and you can watch this thing go overhead. And like the guys were saying, you know, sometimes you'll only have them for about, you know, 1 or 2 minutes. Sometimes if you're really lucky, you'll get them for maybe 10 or 12 minutes. But there's a lot of competition with that. A lot of people trying to reach them also at the same time. You know, you only have that opportunity for a few minutes. One thing that works very well is a little thing called an arrow antenna. It's a little handheld Yagi that you can aim at the space station as it goes overhead, and it works. So you hook that up to your HT, and it'll work. And just a funny little anecdote. The reason I learned this was the hard way. Let me buy a nickel. The first time I tried this, I was out in my front. This is why they call me Doc Brown. I was set up with an HT and I had a J-pole antenna that I was kind of fishing around the sky trying to contact the space station. I'm calling CQ to the space station on my HT. This was a couple of years ago, standing out there, and the neighbors are looking at me like, you know, he really has lost it, you know. And it's like, but you know, that's the beauty of this hobby, Lyman. You know, if you're willing to experiment, you know, really cool things happen. So back to the class. This is KC2RMO.
All right, thank you, everyone. This is a real interesting question for not only Lyman, but everyone else. So I'm going to throw it out there one more time and see if we have any other comments or questions on this question about the satellite or space station. So is there anyone anywhere that would like to come aboard and make any comment or maybe ask any question?
3MEW.
6, Victor.
All right, I'll start with you, Bill. Thanks for being here tonight. And this looks like a very interesting question. Like I said, for not only for Lyman, but for everyone else. And I think, like Gary was saying, a lot of times science teachers work this into their curriculum. So, Bill, what would you like to share with us?
If you check the text box, you see there is a URL there and a web address. I have it bookmarked and actually have it on my title or my most favorite title bar at the top of my web browser. And I can bring it up and look at it at any time. And it shows the International Space Station going overhead. That's not the only one that you can get to look at, but that's one of the ones there are. And it's currently showing the altitude in miles because I have it set to work in imperial, not metric. So the I think it's 263 miles high, and it's showing you the velocity, 17,125 miles an hour, and it's currently coming up over the coast of Australia. There's another one, and this one hasn't done it lately, but there's another one that used to have a circle underneath it, which it traveled with it as it went along. That circle was the radio frequency or the radio distance footprint. That showed you what area of the land, or how much of the land, the satellite could hear and communicate back to for amateur radio purposes. So I don't see the circle on here tonight. I think I got to reset my parameters and get that back in there where it's supposed to be. There's a part of it missing. Anyway, that's the extent of my comments. And There's a couple other space tracker programs around. I just like this one because it looks cool. But back to that, V3MEW.
Well, thank you, Bill. And it is in the text box, everyone, if you haven't seen it. It's http://www.isstracker.com. www.isstracker.com. And I'm sure you can do a search and find any others. But this is one, like Bill says, he likes. Interesting comments on this question, and very informative of those coming back with their answers. And hopefully those through Skype are taking notes on all of this. So, Gordon, what would you like to share with us?
Well, thanks, Kathy. And hi, Bill. KY6V here. I just wanted to amplify something that I think is important. We've gone way beyond. And very interestingly, too, I might add, to the question posed at T8B01 that Kathy originally came up with. Let me read this question to you guys again. Who may be the control operator, underline controlled operator, of a station communicating through an amateur satellite or space station? And what I tried to answer to Lyman originally was that these are the telemetry control functions to make changes at the satellite level. And we've allowed this to go on to how we can communicate, and I think this is very healthy also. You will find a couple of questions that Kathy and I will be handling in the class tonight. We'll get into some of these programs also, Bill, that mentioning that aids a person here on terra firma to tell where this baby is in altitude and incline and so on and so forth. So we'll get into that as time permits. Back to you, Kathy, KY6V, over.
All right, thank you. And I want to thank you along with everyone else and Lyman as well. Great conversations on this question. You know, as we work through the questions and as we finish the course, all of us will actually, Lyman and Stephanie and Jim, if you're listening here, will give you some clues on good test-taking strategies. But before I move on, I'll give you, you know, one of my favorites is always correct, and we'll talk about that. But another test strategy, and this I found very useful when taking all of mine, is actually if you look at some of the questions and look at some of the answers, the answer that is the longest sometimes is the correct answer. So as you're going through these questions, either tonight or in the future, look at some of those questions and some of those answers and see how right I am. So let me pause here for a moment and I'll go into Tango 8, Bravo 0. And let me pause for just a moment.
I'm sorry to bother you, but when Gordon, well, not Gordon, but Bill and him was talking, Jim asked if he was going to talk. So just want to inform you, Jim, talk to.
All right, Jim, if you're through Skype, would you like to come aboard and make a comment? I think that's what Lyman is saying. We missed you. Somehow we didn't hear you. So, Jim, would you like to come aboard and make any comment on that last question?
Yes, good evening. I hope this is working and for UJL here. And I was going to waive my comment, but I'll just mention there's also digital communications such as packet, which make it give you chances. Better chances for communicating with a moving satellite. And I have confirmation cards of that. I'll show Lyman when I ever catch up with him. Wasn't going to do it, but since you invited me, that's what happens. I'm glad my mic's working, and continue with the class, and I'll listen for you, JL.
Well, you know, Jim, anytime you want to make a comment as well, through Skype, Gary can actually relay that, or if you're on EchoLink in the text box, you can put it there. But we don't want to miss any comments or any questions. But let me move on. Tango 8, Bravo 03. This reads, which of the following are provided by satellite tracking programs? And actually, the correct answer one of those favorites I like. All of these answers are correct. Some of the distractors say maps showing the real-time position of the satellite track over the Earth, which is correct. The time, the azimuth, and the elevation of the start, the maximum altitude, and the end of the pass, and that is correct. The apparent frequency of the satellite transmission, including effects of Doppler shift. And that's correct. So that's one reason, Lyman and Stephanie, all of the answers are correct. Now, again, the question speaks for itself, but I'm going to throw it out there once again for any comments or any questions. All right, hearing nothing for this question, I'm going to move on to Tango 8 Charlie. This talks about operating activities, radio direction finding, radio control, contests, and linking over the internet, and grid locators. My question is Tango 8 Charlie 01. It reads, which of the following methods is used to locate sources of noise interference or jamming? And the correct answer is radio direction finding. Now, some of the distractors are echolocation, Doppler radar, or phase locking. But the correct answer is radio direction finding. And once again, that question reads, which of the following methods is used to locate sources of noise interference or jamming? And once again, everyone, radio direction finding. You know, radio direction finding is an interesting part of ham radio. This can be a lot of fun. Many clubs sponsor hidden transmitter hunts where a car hides somewhere in the city and everyone else tries to find it. So, with that, I'll throw it out there once again before I throw it over to Gordon. Anyone anywhere have any comments or any questions on this question, which was Tangle 8 Charlie 01?
Interesting fact, tomorrow night our Aries group will be doing one of these hunts. We're going to one of the state parks. Again, we're going out there, we're going to have some things with trackers going, you know, beeping away, and we have to find them. We have to locate the signal. So that becomes fun. It takes a lot of walking, but it's fun. A lot of guys like that. Over.
All right, Mike, thanks so much for that. I remember doing something very similar to this, but it wasn't to do with ham radio. It was actually a search and discover and find something that had been hidden. But this sounds like very interesting, and maybe before we conclude this evening, there are some of you out there that have actually done this and would like to share. But let me throw it over to you, Gordon, to continue on with our class this evening. And I believe your session is Tango 8, Charlie 02. And I want to thank you as well as everyone else for your nice comments this evening. But Gordon, I'm going to throw it to you at this point.
All right. Thank you, Miss Kathy. You know, direction finding has always been a big part of my life. I've enjoyed it immensely. And Mike, you know, you get out into a park and it can get down and nasty. The guys bury the transmitter under the ground and they run a piece of coax up the tree and they put a green wire antenna in the leaves and on it goes. I mean, it can be a lot of fun. All right, Kathy, I'm with you. T8 Charlie 02 CO2, and that question reads, which of these items would be useful for a hidden transmitter hunt? Now you get four answers in the multiple choice. The proper answer is B as in Bravo, a directional antenna. I will say the disclaimers on the other end, you know, A calibrated SWR meter means absolutely nothing in this question. A calibrated noise bridge will do you no good. And obviously all of these choices are correct is incorrect. So the proper answer is a directional antenna. Now, directional antennas can be a number of types, guys and gals. You know, they can be Yagis, which are beams, quads, loops, and in some cases, Doppler units. But if you haven't tried it and you have the opportunity, Go out and do it. You'll find it a lot of fun. Any questions on this, please, or comments? KY6V for South Guards.
Question.
Go right ahead, Lyman.
Well, the hidden transmitter hunts, is that something that I can just look up on the computer and, or, yeah, my computer or an iPad and find at my local, in my local neighborhood or in the park or something? Or no, is that something direct in, like, a different state or something?
Well, Lyman, if I can answer, with the group, normally radio operators call it a fox hunt, F-O-X, a fox hunt. And sometimes the fire department CERT teams, community emergency response teams, will also do searches. We're practicing the search for missing children or older people who go astray. That's the kind of things we practice for. I don't know if you find it locally, but if you hunt with clubs, again, if there's a radio club in your area, hey, go have a meal with them or go sit down and talk to them. They have all of those things at their fingertips. They know what's happening in your community. Over.
V3MEW.
That makes a lot of sense. I was just with my grandparents, and we were at the Villages, and they had a, just wondering if anybody here lives in the Villages or has been there. They had a big ham radio club, but their next meeting was the week that I wasn't going to be there, so next time I said I was going to come down and meet with them. Over.
I would recommend that. It's always good to get around other hams. You'll hear a lot of stuff you don't understand, but people will take you under their wing. But I think Bill has a comment. Please go ahead, Bill.
That's me, 3MEW. A couple of things I can comment to Lyman about. First of all, I don't know whether you've ever watched much of the nature or the science type shows on television. It's a favorite of mine. I wonder if you've ever heard of or seen them where they put a tracking collar on an animal. And the idea, the guy walks around with this little funny antenna with rods sticking back and forth across it. He's got the earphone in his ear, he's got a radio in his hand. And they're looking for the beep, beep, beep from the tracking collar. And they want to find out where that animal has been, where it's gone, keep track of it, and so on and so forth. That's one aspect of radio direction finding. The other thing that we practice up here, we have a fox hunt every second Sunday up here. And not only do we do it for competition purposes, for fun among the members, we also compete on an Ontario basis, a cross-province base, with other groups who organize hunts. But one of the things we keep our skills tracked for is if somebody is maliciously interfering by transmitting a signal maliciously, such as playing music or cursing or swearing through a repeater and so on and so forth, you got to find that person. It does no good to complain to the authorities and saying, hey, we got interference in Peterborough. Well, that's all well and good, but where is it? We got to go find it. And we use radio direction techniques and antennas and equipment to find and locate where this person is living and where this interference is coming from. And we'll probably sit outside their house, take a few pictures, do a bit of tape recording, and then we have the evidence we need to present it to the authorities, and they can move on from there. And I'm sure the similar thing has been done for, based on what I've heard across many, many states of the United States as well. So, and plus, this moves on into international. When you rise up through the ranks of almost like the Olympics or the sports, there is the Olympics of radio direction finding, and it's held in different countries in different years, and when you get really good and you get on a national team, if you really like it, you can go international to do this. So it gets more complicated and harder, obviously, but it's quite a fun sport, as Gorda said. I'm not very good at it, but it's kind of fun. So back to net, V3MEW.
All right, let me see if I've got it here. Mike, have you got anything else there? Over.
Well, I'm just holding back, but those fox hunts are fun. And actually, in our club, we have two what you call OOs, official observers from the ARRL that have gone through training, and they are constantly looking for people who, they get under the influence, they start getting verbally abusive on the radio and things like that nature. But for a club of 70 members to have two official observers from the ARRL as members, it's kind of interesting, but they haven't bothered us. They're okay. They're good people. That's all I've got. So go ahead, Gordon. I think you got T8Charlie03.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. KY6V here. First of all, I want to say to you, Lyman, that Mike's comment about your local radio club, find out who the local radio club is closest to you and get to know those people. And such questions as where is the next fox hunt or radio direction finding activity going on in our county? And they'll be able to tell you. And I think you'll probably get your information a lot faster than trying to research something on the internet, because it's not always there, and you're going to be looking at information in San Francisco when you want to look for information in Jacksonville, you know, that type of thing. I will also mention that the FCC uses direction finding all the time. Their monitoring stations are very highly equipped, and their automobiles are very highly equipped with directional finding equipment. And that's where they find these bootleggers, and this is where they find the people that are using profanity on the air, and this is where they start to find them when they have found them. Let me put it that way. All right, let me buy a nickel, and we'll go on to the next question. We're going into Tango Bravo Charlie 03T8CO3. That question reads, what popular operating activity involves contacting as many stations as possible during a specific period of time? Now, they give you four answers to this, and the proper answer is A as in alpha, contesting. Okay? The disclaimer on net operations is not appropriate. Public service events is not appropriate. Simulated emergency exercises is not appropriate. The question again read, what popular operating activity involves contacting as many stations as possible during a specific period of time? And the correct answer is contesting. Any questions on this one, please?
Well, I got a comment. Jim, my next door neighbor, as you all know, took me out to a, this is what sparked my ham radio experience, and he took me out, which is very nice. He took me out to a, contesting, I think, and they had to get as many stations or contacts as possible before the time ran out, and it was really cool because they even let me do it, and it was really neat, so I had a great experience.
Yeah, very good, Lyman. Well, I'm familiar with this. He took you to field day is what we call it. Once a year, each one of the radio clubs, or most of the radio clubs, get together and set up an emergency communication type system, you know, in a park or somewhere, not using, in most cases, commercial powered lines to run their equipment. And the task is to make as many contacts as you can on as many bands as you are capable to run. And it normally runs about 24 hours, as I recall. Starts about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday and quits at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday. So I'm glad you had that exposure. Very exhilarating time, Lyman. Over.
Yeah, Jim really helped me on that, so thank you.
Okay. We're going to move on here. T8Delta01T8D01 reads, which of the following is an example of a digital communication method? Okay. Which of the following is an example of a digital communications method? They give you four choices. The correct answer is all of the choices are correct. And the three above are packet radio, PSK31, MFSK. Communication is all digital. You know, we're not using voice. We're not using CW here, guys. We're using the lows and the highs, the zeros in the one, in binary form, digital communication. Any comments on this? Questions, please. Over. Okay, we're going to move on here. We're about ready to wrap it. I see that we're 48 minutes into the current hour. Kathy is up next. She has, what is it, two or three questions? I'm not sure here, Kathy, but at any rate, it's your wrap for the evening. You turn it over to Mike when you're ready, KY6V, and thank you for being with me.
Well, thank you for being with me, Mr. Gordon. I think actually I have two final questions, and I'm going to start with Tango 8 Delta 02. And it reads, what does the term APRS mean? We have a lot of choices that begin with APRS, but the correct answer is Automatic Packet Reporting System. You know, some of the distractors, and I want you to look at it. That's the longest answer, has the most link there. But others are Associated Public Radio Station, Auto Planning Radio Setup, an advanced polar radio system. Once again, the question reads, what does the term APRS mean? Automatic packet reporting system. You know, this is normally used in a car or a mobile application and consists of a GPS that talks to your packet radio and produces tracking information on your travels. And so are there any comments on this question? All right, hearing nothing. Our last question for this evening is Tango 8 Delta 03. It reads, which of the following devices provides data to the transmitter when sending automatic position reports from a mobile amateur radio station? Let me read that again. Which of the following devices provides data to the transmitter when sending automatic position reports from a mobile amateur radio station? The correct answer here is a Global Positioning System Receiver, GPS. You know, the other choices are the vehicle speedometer, a WWV receiver, a connection to the broadcast FM subcarrier receiver. But that Global Positioning System Receiver is the correct answer. You know, as in the last questions, the Global Positioning System Receiver, the GPS, gives the longitude and the latitude information for your position. And I don't have one of those, but probably many of you do. So with that, I'm going to throw it out there for anyone anywhere with any comments, any final comments, or any questions. All right, hearing nothing, Gordon and I want to thank each and every one of you for joining our session this evening. But I'm going to turn it over to you, Mike, for any comments you have. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, we have one more class before we end our technician course for this year. So, Mike, KD0CDQ from KY6B and myself, Kilo 6 Sierra United November, we're going to turn it back over to you.
This is KD0CDQ. Thank you, Kathy. Well, this was kind of an exciting night. Lyman, you might have heard some of the excitement in our voices. We get talking about fox hunts, and we get talking about APRS trackers, and we get talking about PSK-31. These all may sound like strange things to you, but they're fun things to do. The PSK-31, I do a net every Tuesday night just to keep sharp, and because the conditions change every week. The conditions are a little different. Interesting to get your signal across. We have fun with that. We do that through the Salvation Army, and we also do that for the local hospitals and mental health centers. Everybody likes a free service, and ham radio operators provide a lot of free good service to the community. So people always want us to practice transmitting data, everything from blood types to how many beds are available to information about the signal response, how our signals are getting across. So PSK-31 and the other PSKs, you're going to hear about probably in your lifetime an awful lot. A lot of people are really getting into this digital more and more. I keep hearing unusual, a guy will say, hey, I was doing so-and-so with PSK. My ears go up because more and more people, Lyman, are getting into digital. It seems to be the thing of the future, ham radio and other things, because of the data transmission. Pretty cool. Well, There's a lot of good things to learn tonight. You got two outstanding instructors. I think they did a really good job, and it was really good other folks jumping in there. I was surprised. I didn't know Bill was going to be with us tonight, too, from all the way up there in Canada. Good deal. Bill, it was good to have you there with your information and your firsthand observations. Letting it drop. Okay, Lyman, or anyone else that's listening to this and would like to have any help, please contact us. We gave you how to get to us. I'm going to pull out my little sheet so I can say it properly again. If you want to get in touch with us about any questions on the test or any questions about ham radio or any questions about cranes, anything you want to question, just go to write it down if you need it again. It's VOIP, Voice Over Internet Protocol, VOIP, at VOIPnet, one word, .southcars, one word, .com. And send us any questions you might have. We'll gladly communicate with you. And Lyman, you had a question before we started, something about you have to take the test when we finish the classes. Well, that's up to you. If you feel ready, you feel ready to take the exam, I think we all would encourage you to get on out there and do it. Get out there while you're hot. And find yourself your location where the testing is done. A good thing to do if you want to be like a scout, you could go to the testing center on the testing day to observe. If you don't want to take the test right off, observe and see what goes on there. Or observe and then take your test. You don't have to be the first person up to the desk and say, hey, I want to take a test. Usually it's in a library or some kind of a center where there's a lot of folk. You can kind of watch what they're doing, and then you can say, I want to take the test. And after the class on Tuesday, I think we'll be prepared to tell you what you need to have with you besides the cash. Remember the exact amount, whether it be $14 or $15. I would have it in cash and have the exact amount. You have to bring identification. I would think, Lyman, your school ID, if anyone else has a better idea, I think your school ID would work fine. If you get a birth certificate, many young people don't have one available, but if you do, you'll need some kind of identification. And I think, I know here, you need to have a photocopy of your ID to hand over, because they staple a photocopy of your ID along with your test. So with you, with us would be driver's license usually, a driver's license. But in your case, Lyman, it'd probably be your school ID or a birth certificate. And they will need a copy, so I would carry a copy with you. Anyone else have any comments to help Lyman or anyone what they need to take with them to a test besides a pencil and the calculator? Over.
Hey.
JL.
Thank you for, well, after I say this, it'll go back to Jim, because I don't want him to miss his question. Thank you for that, and I was wondering, I don't know if I've already got it, but can you send me on the text or MI, according to Skype, can you send me the phonetic alphabet, or I don't know if you've already gave it to me, I'll check tonight, but can you send me that? Now, back to Jim.
Lyman, if you don't see it on the side.
Yeah, it looked like somebody connected to Mike and he got bunched off. We can do this several ways, Lyman. KY6V here. The first thing that I would suggest to you, and the easiest for all of us, is connect to ARRL.com on your internet browser, okay? And search for phonetic alphabet for amateur radio. And they have that posted on their website, sir. Over.
Thank you. I will do that. Sounds good.
And for you, JL, one more time.
Yeah, I heard you in there, Jim. Let's see. I've got, I don't have CGQ back yet, so he's still bumped because he went into conference. Jim, hey, good evening. Howdy. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I seem to double every time I try to key up, so that's just karma. I sent Lyman the answer to the first question of where to take the test early in the hour to the email address that I normally use. If he has another one or can ask someone at the one I sent it to forward it to him, either way, he'll get the information. The next one for the club that had the field day is going to be early in October, but there are some before that if he's very anxious. And when he doesn't have to go to bed so early, earlier in the day, we'll talk about it. And I will also send him that phonetic list. So that's all I had. I appreciate it. Very nice net. Thank y'all. And for you, JL.
Fantastic. Well, Lyman, it sounds like Jim's got you covered three ways from Sunday. Lyman, do you have any comments on what Jim was saying? And look, on your email, you sent me a change where you changed the C stammer at iCloud to me.com, and I sent you an email today. I wonder if you got both of them. I addressed your old address and your new one. Did you get two of them, sir, over?
Yes, I did. I got it.
Okay. Jim, to answer your question, he has changed over to a personal email, but it's still cstammer, but it's at me.com. But his old one is still working, apparently, Jim. Over.
Yeah, the cstammer at me is what I've always used since before he even got interested in radio, so it hasn't changed here. It just changed for you. You're special.
No, it just makes things ever confusing. All right, let's see. I don't have CDQ back here. Oh, yes, I do. There he is right at the top. Mike, somebody connected to you and just blew you to oblivion. Go ahead, sir. Over.
Yes, I noticed that. Maybe it's connected to all the rains we had. Maybe there's a connection problem. I don't know how much of it the Lyman heard, and I don't remember all that I really said. But what I was getting at is that with the testing, again, all you need is his school ID, in his case probably, and I don't know if he heard that, but I would make a photocopy of your ID, either your school ID or your birth certificate. Have a copy, because they normally, they do out here anyway, they take the copy of your ID, it may be our driver's license, and they staple it along with your test for identification purpose. So wherever you go for testing, Lyman, or anyone, I would have a photocopy of your identification, you know, your driver's license, your school ID, or your birth certificate, whatever you have. I would have that with you. And also the money in cash, the exact amount, find out what the amount is. And I did give this advice. I don't think it got over the air. Lyman or anyone, if you feel a little scary about taking the test, you don't have to be the first one to go up front to say you want to take the test. That's normally in a library or some kind of a public setting. If you want to eyeball a little bit, watch what goes on, watch the procedure, and then step forward and say you want to take the exam, that's quite okay. You don't have to be the first dog out of the chute, if you understand what I'm saying. So if you feel a little imposing on you, just watch what someone else does, and they're getting signed in, paying their money, showing their ID, and then you can do it after they do it. It's much more comfortable to watch another person be the turkey, and then you can do that more easily. And just bring a few pencils with you, and bring a calculator. I don't know that you'll have to use one. I don't think you really have to use one, but people like to carry a calculator and pencils. That's about all. Is there anything else anyone wants to recommend that a lineman or anyone would take to the testing center with them, besides what I mentioned? Over.
Okay, sounds like you're getting there, Mike. Give me 20 seconds for a roll down, please. Does that pause mean I can start, or what, Mike? Over.
I just shut down my recording, too. I'll give you a pause again. I was doing a pause, and I turned my recording off. So go ahead. If everybody would be quiet for a few seconds, give Gordon a chance to shut down the multiple recorders he has going. So we'll be quiet right now. KD0, CDQ.
Okay, thanks, Mike. And everybody, the reason for that just makes a clean cut at the end of the recording. Stand by, please.